श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री राधा गोविंद जी की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद Welcome. Good morning to all. Pranam. And by the grace of Sri Guru, Sri Gauranga, we are continuing winning the lottery. As Krishna Chandra Prabhu very accurately say today in the morning, we have won the lottery. This is a lottery that you can win every day. Generally, nobody wins the lottery even once in a lifetime. And those who win it, it's only once a lifetime maximum. But we have the chance of winning it more than once every day. So, this is a real lottery. And there's no need for gambling for that. So to have the daily chance of hearing Bhagavad Katha, association with the Vaishnavas, that's real wealth, that's real gain, that's real fortune, artha paramartha, that's real lottery. So today we are continuing with with the prayers of Sri Brahmaji. Today we will be studying verse number 31. We are gradually reaching the end of this section, which are 40 prayers. But first of all, as usual, we will make a brief summary of what we saw yesterday. Very interesting verse. In verse number 30, where Brahma was praying for somehow for Dasya Bhav. So I'll read the verse quickly, some words, and then we go to today's shloka. So Brahma said, O Master, I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life or in another, even among the animal species, I may be counted as one of your devotees and continuously serve your blossom-like feet. So very sincere prayer from Brahma's heart. All birds are sprouting in a very organic way from Brahma's sincerity. So we mentioned how in the very beginning of Brahma Stuti, Brahma began with some sweet addressing to Krishna. Then he established lots of philosophy to justify that sweetness. So that sweetness is seen, is appreciated for what it is, not just ordinary sweetness. And then, reaching the end of his prayers, Brahma is again turning back to sweetness. So in this sequence also we are seeing a shifting from Brahma's abhiman, or how Brahma conceives of himself. From being Brahma to praying here for pure devotion, no matter what, with birth, anything. And we will see gradually for pure devotion in the context of Braj. And in the context of Braj, a very specific type of Braja Bhakti. In this verse, Brahma implies, I would prefer to be an insect with Bhakti than a non-devoted Brahma. Showing how bhakti is beyond birth, caste, and all these external designations that sometimes rule other systems, other sadhanas. You have to be born as a Brahmin, you have to be a sannyasi, you have to be that, in order to reach success in this practice, that practice. But this is not the case with bhakti. You can be an ant and reach full success. We spoke yesterday about how bhakti can reach any time, place, circumstance, species. We quoted some examples. Mahaprabhu also dancing in Jarika in the forest, and the whole forest was delivered. All the species there. Although in this verse Brahma is not speaking directly about the Brajavasis, he is hinting in that direction. For example, he used the term Baba Jananam, your own people. Krishna, your own. So who is Krishna's own people? Those who see Krishna as his own people. The Brajavasis think of Krishna, he's one of us. And Krishna says, I'm one of them. They are my people. So indirectly he's pointing to Vrindavan in this way. And therefore, if the Brajavasis are Krishna's own people, he's not only referring to the human Brajavasis, but every single atom in Braj is Krishna's own people. The trees, fruits, dust, etc. The clouds, as we say. And also he points to Braj with the term Niseve. Niseve meant serving continuously and intensely. So if you play out what's the ultimate implication of this, where you find continuous and intense service more than anywhere else, again we land in the land of Raj. So here Brahma is also addressing Krishna with the name Nata. So Nata in this case also means master, but also it can mean all who fulfill all desires. Only you are master if you can fulfill the desires of the servant. And Brahma has a very specific desire in mind, as we will see. But before presenting the desire, he's addressing Krishna as the fulfiller of desires. And again, he's asking here, in an initial way, laying the foundation of Dasya. As we said, it's not that he wants Dasya Rasa per se, but he's establishing all the relationship with Krishna and Vrindavan are sustained in the principle of servitude, of seva, of giving pleasure to the object of our love. That's seva. So gradually he's reaching that point, and he's asking, let me born among your devotees so I can serve them. So this could also be taken as a hint of Rama want to be born in the Prakat Leela in Braj, as Raga Bharma Chandrika explains. So from there he can enter the Nitya Leela forever. Remember we spoke about that yesterday? You have to be born ideally in that Vrindavan on the planet Earth where Krishna is performing his Leela. And from there you get the Sangha of the Nitya Parishads and further churned the prem you have attained, and then you enter Golok. Some people may say, in order to reach the ultimate goal of life, you have to be born in India. Do you agree?
No.
You can be born in Switzerland? Okay. There is hope for the Swiss people. What about Argentina? No problem. Third world country, no problem. I'm not from first world country, no problem. Still hope? Even more hope, because Mahaprabhu is the friend of the fallen, so there we are especially poor.
You eat a lot of cows in Argentina,
Yeah, that's a thing. You made a good point, yeah. I pray to be born in Switzerland my next birth. But no need to be born in India. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says you have to be born in Vrindavan in some planet Earth for entering Golok. So that means you have to be born in India.
But Praj is not India.
I'm just testing and joking with you a little bit. And we also concluded our lecture yesterday where Brahma said, I may be like to be born as your devotee, even as a neophyte. Remember? We spoke about that. Even being a neophyte devotee is glorious because you are already counted as a devotee. So anyhow, in this verse... Sorry? Oh, you were something you were pointing. Yes.
Going back just a little bit, this term that you were speaking of, Bhavacha Chananaman, is Krishna's own people, no? Could you say this is like meaning the village people, or could it also meant from a perspective of Radha saying, I'm Krishna's own?
Well, Radha won't think I'm Krishna's own. That's how Chandravali thinks. You have the Madhyata and Padhyata. There's a difference like variant in the psychology of the gopis. So Chandravali will think, Krishna, I'm yours. But Radha will say, you are mine. So this is like variation. So we could say the idea of I am yours is a more generic way of offering ourselves to Krishna. There's place for that on some level. But when you want to go to the details of Radha's psychology, her mamata or possessiveness will take her to see Krishna's. You are mine. In one sense, everyone in Braj thinks you are mine in a general sense of mamata. Yasoda said, you are my Lala, my boy. The friends said, you are mine, you are my friend. So there is a general idea of you are mine in Braj in general. But yeah, we could say that Radha's Mahabhav, with all its symptoms, make her take a special complete control of Krishna in that situation, basically.
One could say that this desire,
which desire? Sorry?
From the verse yesterday, was already fulfilled. Because he said, I made some mistake in Brahmami Mohan Leela because of my of the highest position in the universe. So maybe next time when you come, Tiras Cham, a low birth. So he came as Haridas Thakur in a Prakat Leela.
That's another one. That's a way of saying that, yeah. We can say, okay, Brahma's prayer is fulfilled in that particular form. As Brahma, he is Vidhi, as we mentioned, someone who's famous for following all rules perfectly. And somehow you can become entangled by such a high position. So now he's willing even to be born in a...
Tirascham.
Yeah, Tirascham. That's the word in the previous verse. So he's born, as we will see at the end of the series a little bit more, but here's the trailer of it, as an outcast, technically speaking, in the form of Haridas Thakur in Gaur Leela, to attain his ultimate goal. So in this way, this verse spoke about Dasya in some way. Verse 24, a little bit back, spoke about Santa. So Santa, Dasya, and today's verse, Brahma will point to the Vatsalya camp, interestingly. And then in the next verse, tomorrow, verse 32, he will present his actual aspiration, the concept of Sakya. So we will explain also why he's presenting this sequence. Generally we speak Santa, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, but he's saying Sakya, Santa, Dasya, Vatsalya, Sakya. Of course, apart from being Brahma's own aspiration, we could say some other things, but that will be tomorrow. So let's go to today's verse, verse 31. So... So it says like this. This verse is in Indrabamsha, a particular meter. All of the first line, as you may imagine, is irregular. So Brahma keeps affected by bhav, and it's not everything in full place. So I will read first once, and then we can read it all together. Aho tidhanya brajagoramanya Stanyamritam pitamativate muda Yasam bibhu vatsataratma jatmana Yatriptaye dhyapina chalamadvara Aho vidhanyam
Gauramanya Sanyamritam Pritamati Vate Muda Yasam Vibhovat Sataratma Jatmana Yatripta Yedhyapina Chalamadhara.
So translation of the verse says like this. Wow, that's how it begins the verse. Wow. Oh, wow, how extremely fortunate are the cows and ladies of Braj. You, Brahma is speaking to Krishna, you, taking the form of their calves and children, have intensely drunk with delight their nectar-like breast milk. O pervader, all the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. This is today's verse. When Brahma, as you can see, is directly pointing to Braj, he's using the word Braja, Go, Ramanya, but addressing that particular department of Go and Ramanya, in this case the cows and the ladies, the gopis, but in this case the gopis, Vatsalya gopis, the elderly gopis. So I'll go word by word, and we can repeat, and then we go to the explanation of the verse. So the very first word, I think you know that already.
Wow. Aho.
So, aho.
Aho.
It was not too much, no? How it should be? You please, Trivanga Prabhu, how?
Aho.
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 So the translation is, wow.
Wow.
Wow. Atidhanya.
Atidhanya.
Extremely fortunate.
Extremely fortunate.
Braja.
Braja.
Of Vrindavan.
Of Vrindavan.
Go.
Go.
The cows.
The cows.
Ramanya.
Ramanya.
And the gopis.
And the gopis.
Stanyamritam.
Stanyamritam.
Breast milk, which is like nectar.
Breast milk, which is like nectar.
Pitam.
Pitam.
Was, we have the mudra subtitles here with Krishna to the back. Was drunk. This is the mudra. Atiba.
Atiba.
Excessively.
Excessively.
Te.
Te.
By you.
Muda,
Muda, with satisfaction.
With satisfaction.
Yasam,
Yasam,
of whom?
Of whom?
Bibho,
Bibho,
O pervader.
O pervader.
Vatsatara atmaja atmana.
Vatsatara atmaja atmana.
In the form of the calves and the children.
The calves and the children.
Yatriptaye. For your satisfaction.
For your satisfaction.
Adyapi.
Adyapi.
Even until now.
Even until now.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not. Not.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Alam.
Alam.
Sufficient.
Sufficient.
Adhvaraha.
Adhvaraha.
The Vedic sacrifices.
Vedic sacrifices.
When it's someone massaging the arm of Krishna Chandra Prabhu, like when Krishna was taking Govardhan. Don't be affected by Aishwarya when he's doing that, but increase your service disposition. So I'll begin with my Guru Maharaj's explanation on this verse, which is pretty long. He's quite inspired to say something about this verse. And very interesting realizations coming, so just in case once again, fasten your seat belts. Given his experience in this Leela, Brahma then glorifies two groups of devotees. In particular, those who were seen to be most fortunate, as he himself seeks a similar good fortune. So here it starts, no? Dhanya means ati dhanya, extreme good fortune, and as we will see tomorrow, aho bhagyam, extreme good fortune. So these devotees are Krishna's Vatsalya and Sakya Rasa associates. Praised in this verse and the next. Other than how they benefited the most from this Leela, because these two sides, the friends and the, and the Vatsalyakama are especially glorified because of the Brahma Vimohan Leela. Remember, this time of the Leela, Madhurya Rasa has not yet came to the stage because Krishna is on his Poganda age. So the main focus in Brahma Vimohan Leela is Sakya, Krishna's friends, the picnic as we described, and the Vatsalya Rasa group, because the, as we'll see, the cows and the mothers of Vrindavan will have the chance of feeding Krishna for a year when he expands, as the calves and the boys. You follow? So my Guru Maharaj says, other than how these two groups benefited the most from this Leela, Sakya Vatsalya, Brahma emphatically praises them as the most fortunate for another reason as well. So which is the other reason? He thinks that Krishna may suggest that because Brahma is very exalted in human society and also very exalted among the gods, perhaps Brahma should aspire to take birth among the royalty of the Jadu dynasty, rather than within the lowly cowherd community. Lowly. So in response to this possible suggestion, by which Krishna might test his resolve, his determination. Remember, the teacher tests the student. And in response to that possible suggestion, Brahma first praises here the mothers and cows of Raj. Astounded as he is by their good fortune. Yeah? By implying, I want to go there, don't send me to Dwarka or Hastinapur or anywhere else. Brahma says that although Krishna is fooling himself, Brahma says that although Krishna is full in himself, in this Leela, Brahma Vimohan Leela, he sees that he who is full is nonetheless nourished further by the breast milk of the mothers and cows of Raj. How much so? Brahma says, more so than he had been nourished to date by the cumulative effect of all the sacrificial fires that had been offered to him, to Krishna. No? So the idea is, Krishna is receiving lots of offerings in yajna, swaha, no? From ancient time, Vedic sacrifice. So it's a way of feeding him. But he's saying, you have been way more fed by the milk that the mothers and cows of Braj gave you for this on a daily basis, and now for this year when you expanded as the friends and as the calves. And furthermore, Krishna could not get enough of the taste of this mother's milk. And thus he expanded into the forms of millions of calves and cowherd boys, and drank this milk for a year. In saying this, Brahma speaks with great conviction as to his own desire to enter the so-called lowly cowherd community. He will settle for nothing less. I don't want anything less than that. Sri Jiva Goswami says that in praising the cowherd people, Brahma indicates his own inner longing to live among them. Although Brahma is glorious as Aja, what does it mean, Aja?
Unborn.
No? Because he has no father and mother like normal birth. He's appearing from the lotus. So that means, Aja means unborn, also can mean he who has an uncommon birth. So although that's the case, Brahma now desires to have a mother and a father in Braj, taking an apparent ordinary birth in Krishna's Prakat Lila, which he sees as far superior to his majestic birth from the lotus stemming from Narayan's navel. So that's my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse. So, some brief words about this before we turn to next commentaries. So that's some brief recapitulation. As you may recall in our first meeting, when I make a summary of the whole Brahma Vimohan Lila, or for those who were not here that day, remember that when Brahma, quote-unquote, kidnapped Krishna's friends and calves, so he thought he did so. Krishna expanded in identical form for each of his friends and calves. While his friends and calves remained in another prakash, in another like portal of Raj, unnoticed by Brahma. So Krishna expanded for a whole year, and the life in Vrindavan continued without problem. Part of this expansion was because Krishna knew all the mothers in Braj will like to have me as their son, and all the cows of Braj will like to have me as their calf. Me, so I will fulfill their desire. In the context of educating Brahma, Krishna simultaneously is doing so many other things in different. With different devotees.
You can even say, just to diminish a little the pride of Brahma, was the Tathashta Lakshan, was actually the side effect, was not even the main reason. The main reason was the desire of the inhabitants of Vrindavan.
Of course, we could say that because Krishna always mainly lives to satisfy his devotees in general, but those devotees in particular, no? The Vrajavasis. So, in that sense, the main purpose, we could say, the whole orchestration of this lila has to do with fulfill this deep longing that he knew. And if the Vrajavasis have this deep longing, it means what? Krishna has that same deep longing to reciprocate. As they approach me, I reciprocate with them. So the cows were longing for having Krishna as their calf, and therefore Krishna was longing to become a calf, to reciprocate. He has no other business than to fulfill the desires of his devotees. That's what Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna has no other thing to do, nothing, except for fulfilling the desires of his devotees. That's his only business. As we said the other day, all the other people have so many things to do, duties. Krishna has only one duty.
I noticed the cows, they are longing for having, instead of their own calf, they wanted to have Krishna. And yesterday we were talking about bhakti in animals. Mm-hmm. So what is this, please? It's more than bhakti. It's incredible. It's unbelievable for a human.
Don't try to make that fit here, because smoke will come from here. Yeah. It's way beyond. You will end like Brahma with the head looking like this.
Spinning.
So again, the point is, Krishna knew the mothers want to have me as their son, cows want to have me as their calf. So Krishna did that. For a year, he became their son, he became their calf. And a whole year passed like that, fulfilling the desires of Vatsalya Rasa. Both the mothers and the cows are in Vatsalya, as we mentioned the other day. So as we already mentioned, Krishna is also here testing Brahma, his student. As we spoke these days, Guru should test the student, should test himself also. And Krishna is testing Brahma, saying, Brahma, you are the highest being in the whole universe. Well, that's the highest position you can attain, materially speaking. You are Paka, Vidhi, following all rules and regulations so nicely. So better you aspire for a birth in the metropolitan Dwarka. Huh? You have such a great personality. Go to the big city. No? Not here, uncivilized tribe of Braj. No? You're such a high person. So Brahma, of course, replies to that by praising the Brajavasi's good fortune. Aho, ati danya. Oh, how extremely fortunate these Brajavasis are. So here we have one aho. The other day we had one aho, remember?
Yeah.
Now there comes one aho. And the next verse, there will be two, double aho. When Brahma speaks about his actual aspiration, he's bordering an aho overdose. So Brahma calls here Krishna Bibho. Bibho means like pervader, or someone who is all-pervading, who is everywhere, who is full, complete. But again, the contrast with this, in what he says in the verses, you are all complete and all-pervading, but you are thirsty for the milk of the cows and the breast milk of the mothers of Raj. So this seems paradoxical. You are complete in yourself, you don't need anything, but you are thirsty for this, for milk. Milk means affection. And affection here means the bhakti of the Vrajavasis. Krishna is thirsty for bhakti, as we said the other day. Krishna's diet is based on bhakti. That's what makes his stomach... That's his diet, bhakti. That's what makes him thirsty, hungry, greedy. That's what makes him Krishna. And as we mentioned, despite all these Vedic yajnas that are offered to Krishna since anadi, since time without beginning, and they are supposed to be feeding Krishna, it's like the fire represents the one you are offering the sacrifice to. But these sacrifices, Vedic yajna, generally more have to do with kanda, karma kanda, these sections of the Veda. They're Vedic, but Vedas, Traigunya, Visaya, Vedanis, Traigunya, Babarjuna, Krishna says in Gita. The Vedas mostly deal with the three gunas. Intense. And then he says, Arjuna, transcend the Vedas. Go beyond the Vedas. For those who like to say, we follow Vedic culture, Krishna is saying, transcend that. So the idea is, Krishna is being fed by this yajna, by this karma, kanda, and so on, But this karma is not filling his stomach too much, basically. As bhakti does. No? Bhakti creates more hunger in Krishna and fulfills him much more. So he was so hungry for bhakti that he had a full year, Brahma Vimohan Lila, expanded in millions, no? The same person in millions of forms, millions of cups, millions of friends, trying to quench his thirst of bhakti. He says, one person, like Rupa Goswami will play, give me thousands of mouths, thousands of years. Krishna is trying to do that with this being millions of cows, calves and friends. The same person with millions of mouths and stomachs, trying to quench his thirst and hunger for bhakti, for drinking the Brajavasi's milk. Brajavasi's milk is the affection of the Brajavasi. Try to see the symbology. Agunraj likes to say this. Now, Golok means the plant of cows. And cows are givers. No? Cows take grass and they transform it in milk, through which you can do so many things. You may not be able to do too much with grass yourself, but they take that and give you back so many things. So cows live to give. As we said the other day, even if a cow dies naturally, she will give her skin so you can make the head for the mridanga. So given up to the last breath, even after that. The cow's atma is somewhere else, but still is given. So that if you want to enter the planet of the cows, who are such givers, you have to become a giver yourself. Everyone is bringing down is giving affection to Krishna. That's why milk is the symbol of that. Milk is affection. And Krishna is never satisfied with that, as we will speak today later. Divine dissatisfaction. He's Atmaram on some level, but there's something else. He's self-satisfied, but on top of that, there is something else. And he always feels, I cannot reciprocate enough with my Rajavasis. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is one term in which Krishna is called Swadhana Atriptam. Not like what you sing not like what you sing in Gurasakam. Swadhana Triptam. But here is Swadhana Atriptam. Which means, Swadhana, he gives himself in charity to his devotees, Atriptam. Means Krishna remains feeling unsatisfied, feeling, I have not given enough yet. He gives his whole being to his devotees, but he feels, I have not given enough. I'm receiving so much from them. Even if I give myself completely, still I'm debtor. That's Krishna's own subjective feeling. That's his humility. So anyhow, in this way, Brahma in this verse is praying, finally, explicitly expressing his desire to be born in Braj. Till now that was not made explicit, but gradually from indirect speech we go to direct one. So again, although he's born as Aja, the unborn, he's praying here, let me have a Brajavasi mother, Brajavasi father, let me be born from their womb and attain the Nitya Braj. So we see how gradually Brahma's longing starts to take shape, become more specific, as we say, from something more general to something more specific. Okay, so let's go to... Yes.
One thing. There was one question that I carried a long time, and I went to all the sadhus in Vrindavan for clarification, because exactly at that moment in Brahma Vimohan Lila, for 1 year, Krishna expanded. And after this year, again, there was the normal calves and the normal cow boyfriend. And one could question, are they not frustrated? You know, 1 year they were with Krishna, and then suddenly it's not Krishna anymore. And it must be a strange experience.
You mean the cow?
For the cows and all the mothers. Yeah, they had the cows, they had Krishna as the calves, and all the elderly gopis, they had Krishna as their son. And suddenly, not anymore. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, was there not a frustrating experience? I went all over. And it was very interesting. all the sadhus in Vrindavan said, no, it was even an upgrade. Mm. And they said, like, because in the Bhagavatam, it's nice, you know, have this relationship with Krishna, but Tulalyama Lavena Vinasvarga, Bhagavat Sanghi Sangasya. The whole Bhagavatam, they pray. I prefer not the association with Krishna, I prefer the association with those who love him so much. So it was like for this year a very interesting variety. But after, you know, it went even further, so there cannot be any frustration. It was a very interesting answer that they all spoke similarly.
So there's full consensus in the assembly of sadhus about this. Whatever happens, it has to upgrade the experience.
Yes, yeah,
so we say there's constant evolution in the experience of love. And sometimes something comes to add variety and spice to the experience. So when you return to the other one, it's never the other one, the same one. It's upgraded.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thanks for the contribution.
But why was it an upgrade then? Why was it not the same situation like before? And then
Just as Maharaj just said, you know, it's always something new. But they had as a variety Krishna for some time, and it was ecstatic exchange. But now, after like being separated from the eternal ragatmika bhaktas, now, you know, because of that separation, it gave a new experience.
Are his parents not ragatmika bhaktas?
Who?
His parents. They
are yes, but they had now an association with ragatmika bhaktas of their sons. So they were like separated from their own sons for 1 year.
Yeah, the fact that you are ragatmika doesn't mean that you won't miss the association of other ragatmikas.
Like sadhu sangha janma mula, huh? And then mukhya anga. It's even after liberated, sadhu sangha is the mukhya anga. It's continuing. Mm-hmm. So this is the experience, is exactly of like the mothers and the cows in Vrindavan.
But did the cows and the mothers realize really that Krishna was there? Or were they thinking that this is my cow, this is my son, but they were experiencing some special ecstasies? you know, you understand what I mean?
What will Krishna Chandra say to that? Did you ask the assembly of sadhus about that one?
Balaram was asking.
Yes, Balaram realized he
after
observed.
A year.
And then after a year, and he even didn't realize that it was Krishna. What to speak of the cows and the parents?
Yeah. So yeah, the reply is not. They were not aware. Like, oh, now Krishna is here. Yeah. Nothing like. But they experienced
something special.
Exactly the type of love they will experience with Krishna, but in that particular.
Yeah.
And that's what took the attention, as we mentioned the other day, of Balaram. At the end of the year, he's so like, what? But the mothers are loving their child as they love Krishna. That's strange. Or they love the cows as they love the calves. And Balaram himself says, I'm having that experience towards those calves and friends. What's taking place? So gradually, he became aware at one point, at the end, Balaram. But then the whole thing continued.
So Balaram was
No, because that day, we mentioned, I think, that first day, the day that, no problem, when Krishna went with his friends to the picnic, was the first picnic, or maybe I didn't mention, so that day, okay, I mentioned in the beginning classes, that was, Balaram has one monthly birthday, according to the constellation, astrological constellation, you are born. We have one yearly birthday, but also there's one monthly birthday, in which, that was the day. So Balaram was caught by the shackles of Vatsalya, if you will. He was trapped by his Vajrasodhananda. So he remained at home and there was some celebration for him there. So he was not able to go to Bhagavan Mohan Lila. So he gradually then realized the whole thing. No?
But this is interesting when we say that they have not realized that it was Krishna, their son or their cub. Then in a way their wish was not fulfilled.
Yeah, I mean, it was fulfilled because the subjective experience was there. They experienced, they would like to experience having Krishna as their child, that doesn't mean they have to be aware that Krishna has become my child. But they were experiencing what they will experience having Krishna as their child, although they may not be aware that it was Krishna. So it has not so much to do with the awareness of, okay, Krishna is now became my child, but the subjective bhava, which is different from the ones they had previously with their child and so on. So it has more to do with the subjective experience they were having. It was not so much, look, let me be aware that Krishna has become my child, but let me feel like that. And they were able to feel like that.
And they realized it?
They realized what?
That they had this Krishna bath. You said they felt it.
They felt it, yeah.
Yeah, but they realized it as well. No.
That Krishna is my child.
No,
that didn't happen. I mean,
No, that the bath was changing. Not that it was Krishna. That the bath was changing.
We have to enter into the psychology of the Vrajavasis, and the point is that they are just carried away by their particular bath. No? So it's not that they are kind of, oh, now my bath is changing, so maybe it's not. They are not like processing. That filter is not there. They are just like carrying away here, carrying away there, according to the waves of the particular bath. No, Gyan Sunya Bhakti will be another way of saying that. No?
Anusandhan Abhav, Goswami says, prema is defined by not thinking on it.
Maybe later.
Yeah. Srila Siddhar Maharaj will translate Gyan Sunya Bhakti as brain dead bhakti. This part is too much heart overflowing the whole thing. Okay, let's go to Sridhar Swami's and the other Purvacharya's commentaries. We have some interesting things to share also today from them. So Sridhar Swami says, we will see different acharyas presenting different groups of verses now. Like in the following seven verses, he says, verse 31 to 37, Brahma enthusiastically declares that a birth as a devotee in whatever species or situation is better than a birth among the gods or other exalted beings. So that's mainly Sridhar Swami's commentary, which can be applied to the previous verse as well. But he connects it with this till verse 37. And of course, on top of that, the point Brahma will be is not only birth as a devotee, but birth as a devotee in Braj. That's the specific type of birth he wants. So Sridhar Swami makes this connection with this eight verses, 31 to 37. Now Sanatan Goswami, in his commentary, he will say in 10 verses, the different acharyas will speak about different groups of verses. So in 10 verses, Brahma glorifies the dear devotees of the Lord. According to Sanatana Goswami, this begins in this verse, including the next 9 ones, 10 in total. And he says, here Brahma, either he prays to have devotion like that of the people of Raj, or he prays to be able to serve their feet. One way or another, he's speaking like that. So in one level, we can understand he's admiring the position of the Vrajavasis. As we will see in some verses, it may seem that he thinks it's too much for me to become a Vrajavasi. It's too high. Like an expression of humility. No? Like who they are, what's the good fortune, who I am 5 minutes ago, thinking you were an imposter and trying to kidnap Brahma's embarrassment. So in that sense, feeling I'm so low, I aspire to serve their feet. But at the same time, we will see, he also will say, but to be honest, I want to become one of them. And Sanatana Goswami then says this, from this, basically this verse till the end, Brahma offered these prayers following the principle of Madhurina Samapayet.
Sweet at the end.
One should conclude with sweetness. That's a principle that we will find in different compositions and books and works, or even when you, in some places in India at least, the sweet comes at the end. Some other comes at the beginning, interestingly. But this applies madhurena samapayat. So at the end, we should conclude with something sweet, on a sweet note. So this happening here, remember, he started with sweetness, then continued with more Aishwarya and philosophy, and then sweetness again.
Also, many bhajans are like that. Huh? They can be very like in the mood of longing.
Mm.
They should mostly end with some hope, some, mm-hmm. some joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You have some song there?
Yes. She will sing today.
Okay.
Abhiram was doing this also today, and then he ended with this major scale, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. This is very typical for, mm-hmm. for the bhajan, and then the praise the deities. And the other melodies were more longing,
separation.
So madhurena samapya. The end. Something sweet. So Brahma says, Sanatana Goswami continues, Brahma says, how amazing, how amazing. In Sanskrit we say,
aho.
So if to learn Sanskrit it's too difficult, you just have to learn this single word. This is the entry point to the where Sanskrit concludes, if you will, where Sanskrit can take you. If someone asks you, you know Sanskrit, say, yes, of course. You just repeat aho constantly, and the other person will say aho also. Interestingly, in some other cultures apart from India, the word aho is there. In South America and some other places, they use aho. Yes, it's very many places. It's not only limited to Sanskrit. So you speak other languages as well if they ask you. You say aho. So Brahma is saying here, how amazing, aho. This is most auspicious. Ati dhanya, a great fortune. The cows and women have reached the highest success possible. Again, ati dhanya means they have reached the highest possible success. And of course, at Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami nicely says, Chaitanya Chaitamrita, every devotee feels that their love for Krishna is the best. And then he concludes, and everyone is right. Yes, objectively, you will feel, this is the best. And the other one will say, this is the best. The problem is when you try to convince others, only what I feel is the best. That's what we call fanaticism, sectarian. But subjectively, I mean, try to convince Hanuman that his bhava for Ram is not the best. You will have a problem. Don't even try. Don't even try, just in case. So he will feel, this is the greatest possible thing. Of course, objectively speaking, we could say, that's not the sweetest thing. Madhurya rasa is the sweetest of the sweet. Madhura. And that's correct, objectively speaking. But subjectively speaking, that may be other experience. It's like if I tell you, objectively speaking, mango is the sweetest fruit. Is the sweetest. And you may tell me, but Maharaj, I like oranges the most. What can I say? It's okay. Still, we know that that's the sweetest, but you don't like sweet that much. You follow my point? So, objectively, yeah, madhurya rasa is the sweetest, but subjectively, something will have a taste for something which is not that sweet. And we shouldn't have a problem with that. That makes us for a mature community and respectful relationships and appreciation of different affinities of each Vaishnava. Again, Brihad Bhagavatamrita is establishing that principle from the very beginning, the first book of the Sampradaya. Sanatana Goswami then goes to the term Ramanya, which means ladies in general, but the also the word Ramanya has to do with the word Ram, which has to do with delight. So he says they, these ladies, cause a delight. That means Ramanya. Them, they who cause delight. And with this, Brahma implies they are giving you delight by giving their breast for you to suckle as a boy. So Ramanya implies how much Krishna is deriving pleasure by drinking as a calf or as a boy in these different forms. It's the same idea, breastfeeding from Vatsalya camp. And then he goes, Sanatana Goswami, to the word Vibho again. Vibho, remember, means like complete, pervader. And he said, this idea, Vibho, connotes the notion of Sarvata Paripurna, which means you who are fully complete in every way. But, he says, Pitam. Pitam means was suckled. So the breast milk was suckled by he who is fully complete in every way. To follow that idea. You say, if someone is fully complete in every way, you won't feel the need to suckle breast milk from someone. And not only that, but that was done excessively, ativa. And on top of that, moda. That great gave you great delight. So all these words are further qualifying what's taking place, actually.
So this is like a transcendental contradiction. The one, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yamididatikam, the one who is maintaining and feeding all beings, he feels most blessed by being fed by them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what basically Jiva Goswami mentions in the Priti Sandarbha. We will explain also, speak about this in the conclusion of today's talk. But he basically says Krishna has a list of qualities being God. But when the highest prem comes into the scene, all those qualities became the opposite. So the sustainer becomes sustained. The independent becomes dependent. Truth personified starts to lie, cheat, and steal. That's Krishna Vrindavan. To follow. So, how to explain that? The Vrajavasa Prem in between affecting the Absolute to the point of making him become human like. That's the charm of the Leela. We will speak more about in a few minutes at the end. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary. He has some interesting things to say. His Lagu Vaishnav Toshani. So, my Guru Maharaj already anticipated some part of the commentary of Jiva Goswami in his own commentary. So now I'll repeat that in detail. Krishna may say at this point to Brahma, I am fully complete. Although I should be soaked in order to be served, I should be soaked even by you, Brahma. But you are Brahma at the same time. You are Parameshti. You are this great personality. And my people are cowherds. They protect cows. Therefore, Krishna may suggest to Brahma, perhaps you should consider becoming a devotee among the Jadavas. Remember, teacher testing the student. You are such a great personality. My people are cowherds. Cowherd is not a very high rank position in society compared to Brahma. try to enter into the contrast of this. And Krishna is appearing in the cowherd community. Krishna is saying, but you are such a high person, Brahma. Better you appear in a society that befits your greatness, like the Yadavas, Dwarka, these great, again, kingdoms. So fearing such response from the Lord, Brahma replies in this verse, saying that the glories of the Brajavasis are higher than all. Again, we should never get tired of hearing this type of things. Of all, constantly re-establishing this, how, in which sense the Brajavasis are supreme and superior to any other situation. Because it may seem the opposite. If you don't pay close attention, it may seem not what it is. So Jiva Goswami says, in this connection, in connection to the position of the Brajavasis, Brahma focuses on some of them here, Vatsalya camp, and thereby hints at his inner longing. No? He hints here. He's not making it clear here. That will be in the next verse. In this verse, he's hinting at his longing by pointing to the Brajavasis, to Vrindavan. Again, he's speaking about Vatsalya here, but the Vatsalya he's praising is in the context of what just happened in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. He's reflecting back and forth in what just happened a few minutes ago and where he's at now, what his prospect. Regarding the fortune of the Braja ladies who gave Krishna their breast milk, Brahma makes a comparison. So we'll go for a minute to the Vedic sacrifices. So Brahma says, the Vedic sacrifices offered to you, to Krishna, have been performed from time immemorial to this day. Till now the Swaha is going on, Brahma says. Why? The Vedas are beginningless. And the Vedic sacrifices are prescribed in the Vedas. So if the Vedas are beginningless, the sacrifice prescribed in the Vedas are beginningless also. You follow? So the idea is, from time without beginning, these sacrifices have been performed. But still they have been unable to fully satisfy you. And Brahma himself has been one of those performers of sacrifices. In Brahma Lok, he's doing that also. And why the sacrifices are not able to fully satisfy you? Because you are Bibhu. You are already fully complete. So what we can do by just this ritual offering, Swaha, still with some separate desire that we have, and we are asking you to fulfill our desire, how much that can satisfy you? And again, the contrast comes. Despite this, you drank the mother's breast milk. Mothers means mother cow also. The two types of mothers. So what's the idea here? Of course, in the Vedic sacrifices, there is no prem. There is no prem in those types of swaha, ritual swaha, where you are inviting Krishna, please come, bless me, I need this, swaha. There is no prem. So Krishna is, so many of these swaha have been going on, but in one sense Krishna says, there is swaha, but there is no swaha. Because swaha means, I give myself to you. So real swaha, you find it Braj. Without fire, without ritual, but Swaha personified. So in this other ritual, there is no prem. So you remain Atmaram, you remain self-satisfied. Those sacrifices are not making too much difference for you. So you are Atmaram, these sacrifices are not touching you. But the prem of the Brajavasis, that prem is affecting your Atmaramata, your self-satisfied status. And instead of being Atmaram, you become Pararam. Pararam means you are divinely dissatisfied. Because when you enter in touch with Prem, you become greedy for more. That's a type of dissatisfaction. Still you are Atmaram on a lower level. No, the foundation is you are self-satisfied. But on top of that foundation, you become dissatisfied. Because the nature of love is ever-growing. So you can always love more and be loved more. And there's no end to that thirst. Chaitanya Chaitanya says, Yadyapi Ishvara Tumi Parama Svatantra Tatapi Sabhavihau Prem Paratantra. So basically means, although you are Ishvara and you are Svatantra, you are independent, Tatapi, but Svabhavihau Prem Paratantra. Nonetheless, your nature is that because due to the influence of Prem, you become Paratantra, not Svatantra. Svatantra means independent. Paratantra becomes dependent of Prem, in the concept of Prem. What we said before, your attributes at God start to be contradicted. You become more than God. Remember, we worship someone who is more than God. God is not Ayan. Krishna is something else, not less. Narayan is God, Krishna is God at home, in the intimacy of his own people. Jiva Goswami concludes saying, therefore, Brahma wonders. Again, And he wonders, what must be that nectar like? That nectar that makes you dependent, makes you contradictory. What must be that nectar, that milk, that prem? Remember, when we speak about milk in Braj, it's just prem in liquid, in a particular liquid form. It's not just milk. It's a particular form. The prem of the Brajavasis is flowing towards the heart of Krishna. So, and again, this word bhivu serves as to create this tension, this contrast. On one side, you are bhivu, you are complete. On another side, you are relishing this special rasa, this special milk that emanates directly from their bodies. So it's not even a substance, an offering that you are preparing from something outside of you. It's just an extension of your own being. And these are ragatmikas, as we were speaking before. Ragatmika cows, ragatmika mothers. So ragatmika means their atma is made of rag. And atma can not only mean soul, if you want to put it like that, but atma can mean mind, body, everything.
Consciousness.
The whole thing, yeah. So your whole sense of personality, rag, is made of intense, passionate affection for Krishna. That means to be a ragatmika. No? Swarup Shakti from tip to toe. No? So the bodies of the ragatmikas is composed of Swarup Shakti. And Krishna only feeds on Swarup Shakti. Remember. So not only he's drinking that Swarup Shakti in the form of milk, he sucked it with his own mouth, even more directly. It's not that he put the glass, okay, give me a little bit of it. He went straight without any intermediate filters. He suckled directly from the source. And again, he not only suckled that, but ativa timuda. He did that excessively, intensely, continuously, and muda, experiencing great delight. Aho. Krishna also says aho, not only Brahma. So for him, this was the greatest bliss for Krishna to have that experience. Remember, as we say the other day, patram pushpam phalam tuyam, this verse in the Gita, Krishna says, if someone offers to me one flower, one leaf, one water, one drop, and so on, I accept that, but bhakti, with bhakti. But in the example we gave of Vidura's wife, remember? With the banana peels? He was not only accepting, no? Okay, here are the banana peels. Okay, I accept the offering. Comes with love. He was eating it. So here the same. He's suckling directly from the breast to directly drink that. He's not just accepting the milk. Okay, Brother Vasil, love me. I say that I accept the offering with love. He puts a glass. Okay, put the milk here. Okay, I accept the milk. No, no, he's greedy, drinking that intensely with great delight. And again, one single mouth was not enough, so he had to become millions of mouths, millions of ears, millions of boys and calves to drink it all as much as he could for a year without interruption. So that starts to hint at Krishna's greediness or prem. So Srila Jiva Goswami concludes in his commentary. He said, well, because the very beginning of the verse is, oh, no, astonishment. But Jiva Goswami then says, each word of this verse shows greater and greater astonishment. Which one of the words is further increasing the aho experience. No? So in one sense we could put the word just aho, 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 aho. That's a verse. Below all these other words, apart from aho, you have to put one aho. No? So Jiva Goswami is making this point. No? Each word shows greater and greater astonishment. He concludes saying, the wonder just keeps increasing. And maybe Jiva Goswami, after saying this, he himself passed out. No? Aho, he says, lost and found, Jiva Goswami. Rasa sar chamatkar. No, that's the essence of the experience of rasa. Aho. Chamatkar means astonishment. That's a very active principle of the experience of rasa. Aho. I'm okay here. So this is the end of the commentary of Jiva Goswami, of course. He passed away after that. Not pass away, but pass out. Sorry. He just... Aho! End of the commentary here. So now we'll go to Bhishmanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary.
It's just interesting. Also, in the prayers of Brahma before, he said, oh, I offer you this whole universe.
That will come after this.
Oh, this is after. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then. That will be almost the last one.
Oh.
I think it's the last verse.
But he's more happy with little milk of the pitch passes and the whole universe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I have a question. What is the point in performing all these yapyas if Krishna's not being touched? What is the point in performing all these yapyas if Krishna is not being touched by it, only by prem?
Well, the point is that those who perform those yapyas are not interested in touching Krishna by prem. As simple as that. They have another agenda. They have another list of things, and they resort to something that is mostly for that type of business interaction. So they are not interested in the other thing, so it's okay. Nobody will force them. Okay, let's go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Sararta Darshini. That will be an interesting commentary. Brahma prayed, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, although I'm totally unqualified, I have prayed to become your devotee. Remember, Brahma is possessed by intense humility also here. If you wish, you may fulfill this desire. No? Remember, last verse he prays, may I be your devotee in any situation.
In Vraja.
Sorry?
In Vraja.
Yeah, he didn't say that clearly yet in that last verse, but the implication was there. So Brahma then says, certainly it is not proper for me to pray to attain the elevated stage of your devotees, engaged in the spontaneous attraction of Vatsalya Bhav on other modes, because such a position is hard to attain. Therefore, I can only glorify it. So again, for a minute, Brahma becomes possessed by extreme humility. So although he wants to attain a position in Vraj, for a moment comes this, oh, but this is so high and I'm so low. So this happens also, no? In one's practice, no? When we have this idea, but in some extreme humility, no? Atmanik shepan karpan nye, I will feel myself so destitute, so fallen. No, no, how can I even think about this? I'll praise that with the hope of someday attaining. No? Like Prabhupada Saraswati in one verse of Radha Rasa Sudanidhi, also he's praising the service of Sri Radha so much. And at one point thinks, but this is so high. So mostly sure I won't attain that. But at least let me die having the aspiration to attain that someday. Something like this. So this humility is coming, dhanya, no? And invading one's whole heart. It's not that it's diluting the ideal. It's just a moment of expressing humility from a particular way. But that's strengthening the ideal. After this we will see. You know, after this Brahma will say, I want that. So Bhishmanath Chakravarti Thakur continues saying, the gopis and cows of Raj are supremely fortunate. The word aho expresses extreme surprise. With this term, suggestive of astonishment, Brahma is hinting at his intense surprise beyond the scope of words and mind. So also this word aho implies this idea. There's so much astonishment that this goes beyond my mind and words. I cannot put it in words. That's why I say you can just say aho, and that may say more than what you can try to put in words. Yesterday we were speaking with Krishna Chandra Prabhu about this. Now you speak Harikatha, but what can you say, put it in words, some things, and you feel I may be doing a crime by reducing this experience to words, but I have a tongue, I have to do something with that. I have to convey something. Words are not enough, but we have to say something. Vedanta Sutra says something like that. It says, Ikshatir na sabdam. The Vedanta. Ikshatir na sabdam means the absolute
is not indescribable.
There are two ways of understanding. One level is he cannot be put in words. You cannot limit the absolute to words. But also one way of understanding this is one level is you cannot say anything about the absolute. Another level is you can never say enough about the absolute. But you can say, you can try your best. Try to say something. But always keep in mind, this is just one little speck of all that could be said. As we mentioned, the classical analogies, Ananta Shes with its hundreds and thousands of mouths is trying to praise Krishna from time without beginning, but till now it has not reached an end to that. So according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Brahma continues saying to Krishna, you, with your transcendental body full of eternal bliss and knowledge, Satchidananda Vigraha, you have taken the form of the cowherd boys and the calves to drink the nectarian milk from their mother's breasts with extreme bliss. With each mouthful you took, you experienced ever-increasing bliss. With each drop of milk was entering, ever-increasing bliss. In your form as the calves, you could not even tolerate the time it took to milk the cows. Follow the point? When Krishna was in the form of the calves, he wanted to drink so much the milk from the cows that when the cows were being milked, Krishna's the calves were like, I cannot wait. I have to drink that now. Without taking the form of the cowherd boys, it would not have been possible to drink the milk of so many different mothers. So again, it was not enough to expand as one cowherd boy, one calf, to taste what does it mean. All of the calves, all of the boys of Raj. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes the even interesting meaning to the word Vibho, which is the name of Krishna in this verse. As we know, every name is for some particular reason. So, all pervader, Vibho. You are so called, now you are called as Vibho, because you turned yourself into so many swaroops, into so many forms like calves and boys. Because of that, you are Vibho, all pervading. And you did this out of intense greed. You could not even miss the nectar from one breast. Drinking from every single breast of Raj. That was good. Since your nature is of full of bliss, there is no doubt that the bodies of the cows and mothers were transcendental. In other words, you are transcendental, so whatever causes you greed has to be transcendental also. Because you are not attracted by anything below that. Who at all can doubt this? And then he concludes saying, even all the Vedic sacrifice performed by myself, Brahma is saying, and others, from time immemorial up to the present day, all of these sacrifices are perfect in terms of mantra, purity, chanda. Procedure, meter, chanda, all of this is in place. These sacrifices have not given you as much satisfaction. And again, Brahma has been doing that. So he's now comparing and realizing this is a whole different thing here. So this is the end of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, which he very nicely depicts Krishna's greediness, no? As Vibho, taking different forms so he can drink as much as he can. With lolyam. No? We spoke these days about lolyam. No? And we spoke about how we should have lolyam. No? Our greed as a currency to enter into the Vrajadam. But here we can see why we are, how to say, expected to have lolyam, to be greedy. Because Krishna is himself totally greedy. I mean, it's a land of greediness. So if you want to enter there, you have to be greedy. If not, you cannot enter there. You cannot be admitted into the inner circle. So you have to be greedy to... Krishna's totally greedy to relish perpetually the love of the Vrajavasis. So it has to be the same from us to him. It's reciprocal. Two-way street. Love is reciprocal dealing. So you want to go to Braj, you have to remember Braj is the land of sacred greed. So you have to be sacredly greedy. Let me conclude with some words from one article that I mentioned, Krishna Chandraprabhu, the other day, and I wrote some years ago. It's actually there are two, so there are two articles called Beyond Atmaram. Again, Atmaram means self-satisfied. But Krishna goes beyond that. So generally, I will share some ideas regarding that. If you would like to read the whole thing in detail, that may be more detailed. But generally, one of the main ideas of God is he's self-satisfied. Remember, that's what Nanda Maharaj told to Uddhav. When Uddhav said, your son is God. He said, no, I know God. He's self-satisfied. Krishna is not like that. Once someone asked this famous Greek philosopher, Diogenes, how do you pronounce that in English? Okay, Diogenes, okay. So someone asked him, who is the most fulfilled person of all? And he immediately said, God. But someone asked him, no, but here on earth, who is the most fulfilled person? He said, well, that person who is closer to God. No? Again, on the level of the general idea of God as self-satisfied. But of course our question as Gaudiyas is, but is God such self-satisfied person? We have in the Upanishads, for example, Upanishads say, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamiva Vasishyate. I think you have heard the word Purna like 108 times in this verse. So that means complete, complete, complete. Self-satisfied, complete. That's the Upanishadic version. But Mahaprabhu said, Shrotam api Upanishadam dure harikatam brita. The Upanishad can take you to a certain place, but Harikata can take you way beyond that. When we say Harikata, we'll say here the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatkata. So the Upanishad will take you to a place. God is complete. God is self-satisfied. The Bhagavad will take you somewhere else. The Bhagavad will tell you a different story. God is not satisfied. He's a puppet in the hands of love. Radhikar prima gur amishishya nata, says Krishna in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sri Radha is my guru devi. And I'm just a dancing child, puppet, learning. I'm a sisya. I'm her student in her school of love. She has a prema vidyalai. No? Prema nata vidyalai. He has a dancing school. And the dancing is in terms of prem. And Krishna says, I have enrolled myself in that school and I am starting to learn my first steps there. But she's teaching me how to dance. I'm her student. I'm her puppet. So that's the God we worship, interestingly. Rasa ghana mohana murti vichitra keli mahotsavolasitam radha charana viloditam ruchirasi khandam harim bande. It's a very beautiful pranam mantra to Krishna, shared by Prabhupada Nanda Saraswati and Radha Rasudanidhi. He saying, Harim Bande, I prostrate myself to Hari. But which is the Hari I worship? He says, Rasa Ghana Mohana Murtim. His form is extremely enchanting and made of condensed rasa. Vichitra Keli Mahotsavola Asitam. He's engaged in very wonderful festival of love and interaction. Radha Charana Viloditam. Ruchirasi Kandam Harim Bande. Who is that Hari? That one whose peacock feather is rolling at the ground at the feet of Sri Radha. That's the Hari I worship, he says. The one whose head means peacock feather, who is on the head.
The feet of Radha.
Exactly. That's the Hari I worship. That's who is always at her feet, rolling there. That's a very different definition from the Upanishadic idea of Purna, 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 Purna. He's in the context of Leela, he's not Purna, he's not complete, but actually his incompleteness, and again this is a realm of paradoxes, is a result of being complete. He's complete, but he has Shakti. Now the Absolute has Shakti. Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shriyate. The Absolute is possessed by different Shaktis, and due to the interaction with his Shaktis, this creates some movement in the life of the Absolute. That we call Leela. For example, in Priti Sandarbha, Sri Jiva Goswami mentions that Bhagavan has different experiences, different types of Ananda. Ananda means what? Oh, very good. In Italian. Spanish, felicidad. In English, joy, bliss, and so on. So he speaks about Swarupananda, Manasananda, Aishwaryananda, and Swarup Shakti Ananda. This is the Gaudiya's definition. In other schools, Ananda. Gaudiya will ask, which type of Ananda? There are so many degrees. No? So Swarup Ananda is the bliss. I will explain it shortly. It's a long discussion. Swarup Ananda is the bliss that Krishna experiences in his own Swarup, in his own internal being, by being himself. Manasananda is the bliss he experiences in his mind. Aishwaryananda is the bliss he experiences in connection to his Aishwarya Shakti. And Swarup Shakti Ananda is the bliss he experiences in relation to his Swarup Shakti. When his Swarup Shakti takes a form, in the form of a devotee. And Jiva Goswami says, the last one is the best. Here, Krishna obtains the highest Ananda through the Swarup Shakti Ananda. Now, God relishing his own existence through the existence of the devotees, through the existence of those who he lives for, if you will, and vice versa. Sri Jiva gives an example in this connection. The analogy of the flute. No? He said, you have a flute, bamboo stick with some holes, but before you have the flute, you can use the air. You can blow, you say, some air, like whistle, you say? Like this. No? So that creates some sound, and it's like, oh, how nice Krishna Chandra Prabhu is whistling. Okay. We are increasing the adhikar here of wisdom. But maybe the next question will be that's more Aishwaric. With the she wants to use the high volume. So if you whistle very nicely, maybe the next question will be, oh, but what if I bring you a flute? And you pour that same air inside that hole. How will it sound? You follow? The same air, but expressing itself through a particular vehicle. And we know, if we bring Krishna Chandra through the flute, that will have another sound, another. It's still the same air, same whistling, but through a particular medium that creates a special type of charm. You follow the idea? So in the same way, Jiva Goswami says Krishna has a certain type of inner ananda or personal whistling, if you will. But when he whistles through the flute of his devotees, if you will, when he expresses his ananda through the vehicle of the Swarup Shakti personified in his devotees, that creates a higher, a more beautiful sound. That gives him more ananda. Krishna says that in the Bhagavatam many places. Nahamad manam asase madbhaktair sadunir bina shriyam chatyantikim brahma akantikim shriyam chatyantikim brahma. Anyhow, but the point he's mentioning there is the next verse after aham bhakta paradino. These six verses, we mentioned the other day, very important. And he's mentioning, I do not derive so much bliss in connection to myself as I derive in connection to my devotees. Oh, similar when he says to Uddhava natatame priyatama atma jonir nasankara nacha sankarsano nasrir naivatma chayathavavam. He's basically saying the same. I love you so much that you are more dear to me than my own self, Krishna is saying. So I love you more than I love my own, whatever is going on in me. I love more that particular expression of Swarup Shakti, my devotee. So, in one sense, Krishna is called Atmaram. Yeah. Atmaram means he who enjoys Ram in his own self. But the point is that he does not desire that enjoyment without his devotees. Krishna is not selfish, in conclusion. He's not... I'm enjoying so much with myself, I'm Atmaram, I don't need anyone. Actually, he wants to share that. And that happens in the loving interaction with his devotees. So we could say that on the basis of what we call tattva vichar, or philosophical consideration, God is complete. This is a more general, impartial. Tattva vichar, God is Atmaram, he's Purna, he's complete. But at the same time, on rasa vichar, or the consideration of rasa, lila, bhava, he has the chance of becoming even more complete in connection to his devotees. Rupa Goswami hints at that when he says, Krishna in Dwarka, he is Purna. Means complete. Krishna in Mathura, he is Purnatara. He is more complete. And in Vrindavan, he's Purnatama, he's most complete. So he's always complete. But on the basis of being complete, he can become more complete. Don't try to think too much about that. She's trying. Be
complete,
careful.
How can he miss the affection of his... If I'm complete, I don't need anything. But this is the paradox.
This is the paradox. He's needy. This is a paradox.
I'm complete, but I'm needy. That makes no... sense here.
Here. That's the point.
Yeah.
Again, that's why we promote ultimately brain dead bhakti. because at one point brain will get in the way of this type of thing. So, sorry. Yeah.
Could I ask you, does Krishna still feel contrast?
Does that Krishna still?
Krishna still feel contrast when he.
Contrast.
Yeah.
In which sense contrast?
Yeah, because if he meets someone that loves more than him, he says that somehow, no? That his devotees love more than him.
Mm-hmm.
So, then somehow for him it could be a feeling of a contrast, because,
mm-hmm.
no? Does he feel that yet still? Because if he's perfect, he shouldn't mm-hmm. feel a contrast, but does he feel that?
Okay. So, again, this is... That's a point. Yeah, we will be speaking about this, especially in the last class here. But what I will say is, of course, God is complete. But again, Krishna in Vrindavan is something else. He himself doesn't feel I'm God. Nobody sees him as such, and he doesn't consider himself. His abhiman, himself, his ego, his sense of identity in Braj is not. I'm God. I'm a Gopa. I'm son of Yashoda. I'm the lover of Radha. I'm the friend of Subal. That's who I am. If you interview him in Braj, he will say that. Who are you? I'm the friend of Mother Mangal, Subal. I'm Yashoda, Nandalal. I'm Radha. Sorry?
I love a girl from Pasana.
Yeah. God? God is Narayan in the altar. We worship religiously every day. So my point is, Krishna is God, but totally enveloped, covered, if you will, by Swarup Shakti, by his own Shakti serving him, facilitating another experience of intimacy. So he will never in Braj tell the Brajavasis, hey, why I feel needy? I'm God, I should be complete. That's not happening. That will be Rasabhas. It's not happening in Vrindavan. So, but yes, he feels in connection to the love of his devotees, he feels... I'm not giving enough. Indeed, we will see in the last verse, we will see on Saturday, we have a few days yet, Brahma will ask Krishna, how will you pay to these Brajavasis? Because they have given you everything. Their bodies, minds, houses, families. So Brahma is wondering, I wonder just how you will plan to reciprocate with them. Because you have given yourself to Putana, Brahma will say. And Putana just want to kill you. And you give it yourself to her in such a degree, although she wanted to kill you. So if you reciprocated as such with her, how will you reciprocate with the Brajavasis? And it's interesting because Krishna doesn't reply there. He becomes like, good question. How to reciprocate? He will reply to that a few chapters later. Mm-hmm. We will see that in a few days. Let me create some mystery as well. And that will be the culmination. So I have all of you till the last day in the
No.
Yes. 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 I'll throw you into a pool of anxiety now. I'm not such a good person, as you can see. So we can say, as Krishna, again, from Tattva Vichar, God is self-satisfied. From Rasa Vichar, he is not satisfied, and he tries to satisfy, as this verse is saying, for example, by drinking the milk of the cows. But the question for us is, and does he find full satisfaction? Is there a point where Krishna says, okay, finally, now I became Atmaram again, something like this.
No.
Will he say that? What do you think? As we say these days, Krishna is God totally affected by love in the highest level. So the nature of love, as we say the other day, is it brings total fulfillment, complete, but, paradox, it also becomes, bestows a second experience, unique experience, unlimited dissatisfaction, because it can always grow. There's no limit for expansion. So, you are complete, but you are not complete. You are complete in one inferior sense. So, I'd like to conclude with one very nice verse that I like a lot. I'm still in the process of memorizing that one, but it's from Brihad Bhagavatamrita 2.4.228, just in case, for the memorizers. 2, second canto of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, 4th chapter, verse 228. So Sanatana Goswami says, Vishesato nagara sekharasya swaramata disvagunava padai apekshaniya paramapriyasa kasta parasri bhagavatva simna. It's a very interesting idea. With this, we will almost conclude. Fasten your seatbelts again. A second one. Ask a second one to the, how do you say?
Stewardess.
Yeah. So he says, it is especially noteworthy that the crest jewel of clever heroes, Sri Krishna, he can forego, no, he can abandon his Atma Ramata, his self-satisfaction, and all his other qualities. He can do that. But he cannot give up his quality of coming under the control of his beloved devotees. He accepts their control graciously. This alone is the ultimate limit of his godhood. This is a very interesting verse. There's a lot to unpack here. So, do you follow my point? Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Not Chaitamrita. Brihad Bhagavatamrita.
Yeah. Wie kann unbegrenzt sein, wenn doch eine winzige Begrenzung hat? Wie ist das möglich?
How can he be unlimited when he has some limitation?
Which is the limitation?
The limitation to get under the control of his bhaktas. He said that is the only, he can't get out, that this is his limit.
Yeah, but that's not a limitation.
This is a quality.
That provides an unlimited experience. So how can it be a limitation? That helps his love to grow constantly. So it takes the form of limitation. It takes his control by... Like if I tell you, you are controlled by love. If someone loves you and you love someone, the two of you are controlled by love. But you don't feel, oh, this is limiting me. No, I feel I'm growing. My heart is expanding. But I'm controlled. So again, paradoxes. In one point of our practice, we have to learn to coexist with paradoxes, one after another. There's place for harmonizing all paradoxes. Jiva Goswami calls Braj, defines the word Braj, that place where all things find their proper place. All the paradoxes are perfectly harmonized there.
So there's no hindrance on the limitlessness.
Exactly. So here, again, brief words regarding this verse, and we'll finish here. So he said, it's especially important to note, Sanatana Goswami, that Krishna has so many qualities, unlimited. And he can live all of them. Even being Atmaram, except for one quality he can never give up. Which is? Yeah, becoming under the control of his devotees. That's Krishna's favorite quality in himself. If you will be interviewing Krishna, you ask him, what's the favorite thing about yourself? I mean, he has so many things to say. But his love is perfectly humble. He will say, the favorite quality about myself is that I cannot leave the control. I remain always under the control of my devotees. That's a favorite thing in me, which is not so much about him, but about the love of them. So that's Krishna's own favorite Krishna. That's my favorite Krishna, he will say. And interestingly, Sanatana Goswami has said, Para Sri Bhagavata Simma. Simma means the ultimate limit. Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's called Paratattva Simma. He's the ultimate limit of the Absolute. That's another conversation about the glories of Gaura Tattva. But here it's saying, Bhagavatva Simna, the highest reach and limit of Godhood, of being God, means this, that he can leave everything except for being controlled by his devotees. In one sense, that's the greatest Aishwarya. Guru Maharaj likes to make that point. Madhurya is the greatest Aishwarya in one sense. No? The sweet intimacy by which God becomes fully controlled, that's the greatest quality of God. That's what makes God, God, in the ultimate sense of the term. That's what Sanatana Goswami is saying here.
I can't follow that.
Okay, that's a good symptom. Here's saying, we are speaking about God. So, Krishna is God in one level. But when God becomes upgraded, maximized, he becomes Krishna. And the quality of Krishna, still God, in one sense, is not that he stops being God, but he just
expands,
becomes something more, purnatma. So he can live all his qualities. It's not that he's leaving them, but he's willing to forget about those things. He can't forget that he's God. In Vrindavan, Krishna is God, forgetful of his Godhood in Vrindavan. Not that he lost the position of God and someone else entered the throne or something. He's God. But he's totally... No? The example sometimes given is like if the president of a country, you are visiting the president, the presidential house, full Aishwarya there. No? There comes the president. You have to say like this, don't embrace him. It's a whole list of rules. You should dress in this way, not in this way, in another way. No? Don't put a garland, don't throw flowers on his head, you just, Mr. President, no? All this. So in one way it's boring, totally formal, even for the president. But when he returns home, maybe the grandson, grandchild of the president is waiting. And the grandchild is not thinking the president is coming, he's thinking grandpa is coming. So he's hiding behind a door, and when the president of Switzerland enters the house, the boy jumps on the head of the president and says, go to the floor and be a snake now. No? And the president, the most powerful person, if you will, or one of them in the country, who can press a button and send an atomic bomb and make a country disappear, is on the floor moving like this. So he's so powerful, but there is something more powerful than him, the power of affection. At that moment, he's totally forgotten he's the president of Switzerland. He's still the president, but that's not in his awareness. You follow my point? And for the grandchild, the same. He's not seeing any president. He's seeing a snake, and he's riding on the snake and having a great time. So that's Krishna in Vrindavan, basically. No? He's God, but he's totally captured by intimacy. So he's forgetful of that. But he remains being God. You follow my point? So what's the last limit of him being God? What he shows basically in Vrindavan, that's the point. No? And he becomes totally controlled by his devotees. That's the highest reach that God can attain. Remember, Krishna is God. But when God becomes all that God can be, all the ultimate implications of being God means you forget you are God. You follow my point? No? I mean, God, in his ultimate experience, forgets that he's God. He can only reach that because he's God also. Again, Aishwarya is in the background allowing Madhurya to happen. You need that Aishwarya. You need that Krishna is God so he can be the son of Yashoda and be charming as he is and all these type of things. So that's why let me share what Sanatana Goswami says in the purport that will hopefully shed further light. And with this we conclude. So in the purport to the verse I just quoted, Sanatana Goswami explains, the more God manifests Bhakta Vatsalya, again, that's a favorite quality of Krishna. Bhakta Vatsalya means he's affectionate toward his devotees. Vatsalya comes from Vatsa. Vatsa means calf. So Vatsalya is like the affection, Vatsa, the affection that the cow has for the calf, basically. So Bhakta Vatsalya means how Krishna is affectionate to his devotees. So as much as God manifests Bhakta Vatsalya, the more he becomes Krishna. No? Krishna means God exhibiting the fullest extent of Bhakta Vatsalya. Because he's also receiving that level of affection, so he reciprocates accordingly. Remember, the two sides are always there. No? The fact that Narayan is not exhibiting that level speaks about the bhakti of those who worship him. And he appears accordingly. So, the more the God manifests, as much as God manifests Bhakta Vatsalya, the more he becomes Krishna. This implies that he will give up all his other qualities, including omnipotence, self-satisfaction, all this omnis that makes someone God. He will give up all these qualities in order to retain his identity as Bhakta Vatsal. And that is the ultimate identity. I don't want to leave that one. If I have to leave all the other qualities, I leave them. But let me be Bhakta Vatsal. And Sanatana Goswami, after saying, he lived everything in order to retain Bhakta Vatsal, which is an attribute he especially honors and keeps close to his heart. So that's the most secret and confidential and valuable thing for Krishna himself. And of course, again, all this situation creates some, as we said, will Krishna be fully satisfied as Bhakta Vatsal? We may say no, he will continue tasting divine dissatisfaction. And as we will see also in the last lecture, but here a trailer of that, as we know, when he witnesses the degree of Radha Bhav, Krishna experiences new desires, new insatisfaction, dissatisfaction. He appears as Mahaprabhu, trying to attain satisfaction, a new degree of satisfaction in Gaur Lila, tasting Radha Bhav. But as we say yesterday, he tastes Radha Bhav at the end of the Lila, speaking the last verse of Shikshastakam. Okay, he tasted Radha Bhav now. Now we can say Mahaprabhu is fully satisfied. Krishna attained full satisfaction. Atmaram, he got his Atmaram back as Mahaprabhu. Again, no, because Radha Bhav is a bottomless ocean. So for now we need an eternal, ongoing lila in which he will be tasting that forever. Nityanavadvip ki jai. Somehow that will be the solution to the dilemma, if you want to put it in some way. You know? He's constantly trying to. And that's how the Absolute keeps expanding and growing without limits. We spoke these days. He's not stuck in one point, always the same.
Mm-hmm. But I still don't understand. Maybe you answered it.
Mm-hmm.
Why did he go away? Because he has to change mood? Or
go away who, from where?
He went to Mathura, to Dwarka. I don't understand this.
That requires a whole separate series of lectures. It's complex. Krishna chanted some words to pacify our audience.
It's hurting me.
He's not going away.
Oh no, he's not going away. And what is about Radha? He's not going away. Of course, he's in the yes. What?
Time.
Love and separation.
Yeah. And
yes.
Union. She thinks that she's feeling the love and separation, but she actually is meeting him even more intensely than before. She embraces, for example, him, and then later she sees, oh, this is a tree. That actually it was him. She's never separated from him.
Yeah, it's one soul.
But he has to fulfill his dharma as well.
don't tell that to her. You will have some problems. Yeah, there are many ways in which our teachers have explained that, but at the same time, I will say it's okay that you feel like that. No, in the sense of the idea is that it creates this type of questions in sadhakas, in practitioners like you, like, but why? No, and you start to empathize with a particular situation of the Brajavasis, and you start to identify with their plight. And all this brings you closer to the Brajavab. Actually, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the, one of the main reasons for us to get born in the Prakat Lila on earth, is that for you to know, is because in that Lila, the Prakat Lila on earth is characterized by separation. And for our Prem, let's say in this lifetime someone attains Prem, without its further developments, just Prem, generic, not generic, but without the further developments, Nehaman, Pranaya, Raga, Nuraga, and so on. For that Prem to be developed, you need to be born in Vrindavan on earth. Why? Because in Vrindavan on earth, apart from being having the Sangha of Nitya Parishats right from the womb, also there Krishna exhibits the separation lilas that do not take place in Golok. And by the experience of that separation, your prem will reach new heights. And that's required for you to attain an accomplishment in the type of relationship you want. Because so it has to do with the necessity of separation for making the heart grow fonder, as they say in English. It seems... Separation makes the heart grow fonder. Do you follow? I don't know. So there's these dynamics of union and separation. They are constantly, in one form or another, playing themselves out eternally even. Of course, in Golok Vrindavan, Krishna is not leaving Braj. In Gokul, he's not leaving Braj either. Technically speaking, Rupa Goswami said he's not taking a step out of Braj ever. He just turns and manifests to create a particular experience and path. And he goes out of Braj in a particular expansion. And even in that expansion, as where Goswami explained, at one point Krishna returns to Braj and joins all the associates, and from them they go to the Aprakat Vrindavan. We have explained that some months ago in a series of lectures about the Brahmar Gita. And how in the Puranas there are some descriptions that Krishna, after Dantabhakra was killed? No,
Lavanasura.
Well, there was someone else killing Mathura.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Lavanasura.
Okay, but there was someone else.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Dantabhakra, yeah.
Dantabhakra, yeah, yeah. So after killing them, Krishna is he was in Dwarka. He goes to Mathura to kill this demon. So Mathura is pretty close to Vrindavan. So in the Padma Purana is described that Krishna goes, that expansion that left Vrindavan, and goes to Braj. And merges the original Krishna that never leaves Braj and rejoins all the associates, and from there they go to Golok Dham. So we have to go beyond the appearance of separation. That's a whole long topic and very mysterious one, because separation seems like poison on the outside, but internally it's like nectar. Krishna Das Kaviraj said, Bahya Bisva Jala Hai Bitare Anandamai Krishna Premer Adbhut Charit. He said, the wonderful adbhut, the wonderful attributes of Prem are bahya bisya jala hai. On the outside, it seems like poison, bhitari anandamai. In the inside, it is full of ananda. This is the astonishing features of Prem. It seems that they are dying, they are suffering, but there is the possibility of sweetness in pain. That's another paradox. In this world, generally, we cannot accommodate that. Like suffering can be sweet.
Yes.
There is place. We have a glimpse here even. Sometimes the example is given, I don't know, in one village, in sadhu comes and he will recite Ramayana for a whole week. The whole village assembles to hear Ramayana, which basically is one tragedy after another.
Everyone crying.
Everyone's crying. First day, day two, day three, day four. All day crying for a week. So seventh day comes, the sadhus, okay, the assembly is over with your permission. And now everyone starts to celebrate. Are they celebrating when he leaves? Oh, we stop crying now. Great, let's celebrate. They start to cry because they cannot continue crying. So you have even a glimpse here of that. No? Some people sometimes see watching a movie and they're crying. And what if I appear and say, stop crying, and I close the screen, and you will go, what are you doing, Maharaj? But you are crying, I will tell you. No, you don't understand. I'll explain you later. Leave me alone. And you continue like, I'm like, what's going on? So there is place for the things. No? There's place for sweetness in suffering. For example, there's a famous example. They say that when Christ was crucified, the specific place that happened, there is one particular flower that grows there. I don't remember how to say that in English, but it's to say that it's a flower that came from the tears of Mother Mary after seeing the crucifixion of him. So the idea is something painful gave birth to something sweet. So again, we need to develop another way of thinking about reality for accommodating this type of thing. If not, it will seem like contradictory.
Yeah, but when you're suffering the sweetness, you cannot think. That's the problem.
Again, sorry?
When you're suffering in sweetness, you cannot think. There's no way you cannot...
But you know, we have to understand, there's a famous verse, Yata Deka Vaishnavira Vyavahari Kanishchaidaniha Sai Paramananda Sukha. If you would take all happiness that you could experience in all worlds at all times, and you would put on one place on a scale, and on the other, you choose one drop of divine separation, this would be much more value, you know, much more. Yes, going like this. So in one way, it externally looks, like Maharaj said, like a pain. But it's a variety of the ecstasy, because the ecstasy, the ananda, has so many varieties. So, navi-navi pralambena sambhogam pushti mashnate. You know, this intense separation that Maharaj said, this is the reason you go into prakat-lila, and in the prakat-lila suddenly you experience an extreme, intense form of separation. But this prepares you to the Nityadham. It's like entering. And this Vipralamba is nurturing your meeting. So it's just like two banks of the same river.
At last, Kripa.
Higher. Tide, low tide and high tide. Low tide of separation makes you enter the high tide of union. And in the Nityadham, Krishna will stay always there in Braj, but on a daily basis there will be separation also. Shorter periods, but you will have upgraded prem there, so that will be intense. It's not but he won't live for years. I mean, he lived for 1 millisecond, and subjectively you feel that like a yuga. So again, you can say, so why he's leaving? But that's not the question, basically, because that, as Krishna Chandra was explaining, creates this nourishing dynamic between union and separation, and with the two of them are necessary, because if there's no separation, there's no union. There's no joy of meeting your beloved, because you're already with him. If I always next to Krishna Chandra, always without separating from a second, there's no union ever, because I'm there. I'm already there. For experiencing union, I have to be separated. And then Raghunath Das Goswami offered pranam to Yoga Maya in his Braja Vilas Stav, and he defines her dynamics as Man Abhisaru Utsava. No? She's created a festival of Man and Abhisar, no? Which is another way of saying separation and union. Man means when Radha gets... What's this word in English? Not angry, but there's another word. Sulky, yes, sulkiness. So, sulky mode, sulkiness. So that's man. And Abhisar has to do with the love journey in which Radha goes to meet Krishna. So Yogamaya is creating this this dynamics of man, Abhisar, separation, union, separation. So love, the experience of love can be refreshed, if you will, updated. This dynamic creates an increasing of the experience. It's not diminishing anything. That's the ultimate point. What's the fruit of that? Falina farishyate. You have to judge a tree by its fruits. What's the fruit of all this pain and suffering? They love each other more and more. Their loving interaction keeps expanding in spiral-like fashion. So that's in theory, if you will, what we can say, and the rest is going there and finding that for ourselves, basically.
Thank you.
Okay.
Gopinath Maharaj always said, love grows in the house of separation.
Yeah. embankment of separation. Okay. Can we save it for today in the evening or no? Ah, no, today we don't have Q&A, right?
Yeah.
No, okay, go.
Okay, because this big, big pain that they can feel, you know.
What?
High, low. The big pain that Krishna and Radha and the devotees can feel because of separation and so on. And if it's bigger than in all our worlds here, then it must be also felt like pain in the body, right? Because we here we have pain.
Emotional pain can also
become pain that feels like pain in the body. We can get a stomach ache from pain. And if they have so much pain, like Radha also, I decreed she has some fever and some.
Quite often.
If they have not a body like we
have, do they feel this pain in the body also? Of course, the point is, again, their pain is not our pain. Their bodies are not our bodies. So it's difficult to speak about something that is way beyond our own experience. And it's very delicate because we may end up projecting how we feel in fever or with stomach ache. Oh, so when you read of Radha's having fever, I know what that it feels. No. Because her fever is out of prem. So if I don't have prem, I don't have a clue what is going on through. And so I will say, yes, they have a body, they have fever and pain, and that expresses in their body, but all those things are categorically different to the experience we have here now. No, and we should be careful in understanding these things, because we may even feel, I don't want that.
Exactly.
You follow my point? I know one person that began studying Gaudiya Vaishnavism and started to hear all the things and Mahaprabhu grabbing his head on the stone walls of the Gambira and crying and blood oozing from the pores of his body. And he said, I don't want that. And he became Buddhist. I go to Nirvana better. No suffering, everything's quiet there. I don't want to end like these guys crying for eternity and all this stuff. So my point is, he made the mistake of comparing his experience with that. So there's a point when we have to be careful about not falling into that and be careful not to overthinking the things, but understand all this is in the context of divine love and a supremely blissful and loving. And until I got there, there will be something I will be missing because I'm not having that experience. So we have to be careful not to let our head like swallow us and try to understand that there's place for this paradoxical suffering. No, it's a totally different experience of pain, totally different experience. Again, we have probably very ingrained this pain is negative. I don't want pain. That's an intuitive movement in this world. Pursuing happiness, avoiding pain. I don't want to suffer. I want to be happy. It's like instinctual. So now you hear all the things that eternally suffering.
Yeah.
Oh, I go for Santa Rasa in Vaikuntha, maybe. Something like that. So gradually we have to, if we feel that we may be getting disturbed at some point, sometimes we may need to take some distance from some of these detailed descriptions if we are not able to handle them. Because maybe some of us may have too strong or traumatic experiences with something that we need to solve and have in place. So when we hear something else that resembles that, but is totally different, we may not get triggered. You follow? That's delicate, but that can happen. If you had a traumatic experiences on anything, and I say something that just resembles that, for you just triggers the same emotion. But maybe it's totally different. So that shows that we may need to solve that ourselves. Not that there's a problem with the thing that triggered you past trauma. No? So I'm saying, on some level, it may happen to all of us in some degree or another. So we have to know how to navigate these delicate waters, if you will. No? But there's place for suffering being sweet. And I will say something briefly just before that. And we have experience of that, for example, in a very basic form of love, which is compassion. Compassion means, I see you suffer, I empathize with that. That means I suffer. But I suffer in a way that my heart expands. So I think that's a good way to, before going to the suffering in the Lila. Here we can experience compassion, and that implies a form of suffering, but it's sweet. It makes our heart grow. So that's hinting how in the higher realm the same thing can happen. Suffering making your heart grow. It's not that after being compassionate you say, I didn't like, I suffered, I will stop being compassionate. It's not like that. You become more compassionate. So you suffer more, in one sense. But you love more. You suffer more, you love more. So there's place for that. Actually, the idea is not to stop suffering. The idea is to learn to suffer. So you learn to suffer in such a way that it increases your love. And here you have the ultimate example of learning to suffer in a way that love keeps growing, escalating without limit. Okay.
You rightfully mentioned that from the Ishupanishad, it is said that God is that He's complete and everything that emanates from God is complete.
Mm-hmm.
And you rightfully said that the Harikata is much higher than that, and this prayer of Brahma revealing something much more high and sweet. Other devotees, also speakers that I have heard here sitting in your place, they emphasize so much this higher thing. For example, there was one. You are saying this verse, Sarva Dharma Paritya Jamami Kam Sarvanavaja. This is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, this is right. And do not listen to what Krishna said before, because that is inferior and actually it is distracting. And another devotee here I heard say, because the Ramashambhama, like Ramananda Roy, he was saying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Ramashambhama is a way to attain God, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, this is superficial, say something more. So one devotee here, he said to me, if Ramashambhama would be established in Switzerland, I would go into the resistance, I would try to disturb this Ramashambhama, because it is. I prefer this system we have now. I'm not going to listen to that. But Ramashambhama, this is inferior, and we don't want this. So, and similarly, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that rise above the flowery language of the Bhagavad Gita.
Of the Vedas.
Of the Vedas, thank you. Not the Bhagavad Gita. But he's not saying that it is Vedavyas who wrote these scriptures. They have a reason. It's not that they are wrong and bad, but that there's something even more higher. So what would you say to such a person who thinks that the Ramashambhama is something bad, and if it would be established, I would go into resistance and try to disturb it and fight against it.
Well, Varnashram is.
Everyone knows it was very complicated. Was würdest du jetzt dazu sagen? Zu der Aussage, die wir getroffen oder die ich gehört hatte, dass jemand in Widerstand gehen würde, als Varnashram Dharma, also das vedische Gesellschaftssystem in der Schweiz etabliert würde. Wie siehst du das? Thank you.
Varnashram is not something bad. Krishna says in Gita, Chaturvanyam, Mayashristam, Guna, Karma, and so on. Me myself created this system. So, I mean, Krishna created the system, you cannot say that's bad. Basically, you're telling, if the system is bad, the one who created the system is bad. that one said, on one side, of course, in comparison to the highest peak of Ramananda Sambhat, Varnashram is not the ultimate goal. That doesn't mean it's bad. I mean, Mahaprabhu was tasting the ultimate goal, but he was respecting Varnashram as a sannyasi, simultaneously. No? He will say, Naham vipro, nachanara, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not Brahmin, I'm not... But he will behave accordingly to the codes of society. So, of course, some very high devotee may say something out of bhava, as we say the other day, in a more fanatical way. I don't care for this, who cares for that? That's another thing, that's a bhava statement. But for that you have to have bhava. So, I don't know who is the devotee you mentioned, and I'm not interested in judging. Maybe he has bhava or not, let's see. But the point is, the same statement can come from a bhava bhakta or from a kanishta bhakta who is fanatical or something like that. No? A madhyama adhikari won't say that. No? A kanishta may say that, an uttam may say that. A madhyam will say, no. Varnashram is good. It's not the ultimate goal. That's interesting because Rai Ramananda begins with Varnashram. And of course, Mahaprabhu says, Eho Bahi Agi Kahyar. That's superficial, go deeper. But also, I will say that the very fact that he began with Varnashram means probably to get to the higher goal of life, you need to have that in place first. And when I say to have that in place, what do I mean? I'm not thinking we have to get the whole planet re-establishing Varnashram system. But what's the essence of Varnashram system? The essence is to be psychologically balanced as a human being, according to your nature. That's the essence of Varnashram. So you need to have that in place first, as a Vaishnava, to reach the highest limit of Mahabhav, if you will. So in that sense, I could say, that's why Ramananda first mentioned Varnashram. It's not the ultimate goal, but that has to be in place first. You have to be a balanced human being if you want to be a transcendentalist. Because if not, in the name of being transcendental, you may be totally dysfunctional, emotionally, psychologically, and so on. And representing such a high ideal as Gaudiya Vaishnavism, while you may need to go to therapy. So, of course, Varnashram is not the goal. But there's place. That's why Krishna, in the beginning of the Gita, says, Krishna, Arjuna, follow your duty. Then he says, Sarva Dharmam Paritaja. But that's after almost 700 verses he's saying that. You have to see everything in context. A Shastra has to be understood in context. I like to say, a text without a context becomes a pretext. So you can just cherry pick some. Oh, Krishna say this here. What he say before? What he say after? To whom he was saying that? All the things have to be put in place. If not, you can create chaos in the name of revelation. So Krishna in the Gita is speaking to different people, different layers of consciousness in the Bhagavatam also. It's not just one single type of instruction. Sukadeva was speaking to Parikshit, but so many others were there. There are verses in the Bhagavatam that seem to promote Advaita Bhat. Even the last instructions he's given to Parikshit before leaving his body, he says, Kaivalyam ek prayojanam. The ultimate goal is Kaivalya. Oh. Of course, there's a way to understand Kaivalya in other terms. But my point is, we have to understand Shastra in context. So Krishna is saying, abandon totally Varnashram and surrender fully to me. But what's the meaning of that? He's not saying become an activist and opposed the idea of being psychologically balanced. That's Maya, that has nothing to do with Radha Bhav. We want to enter the Nara Lila of Raj. So if you want to enter the Nara Lila, Nara Lila means human-like pastimes. First, you have to be a balanced human being. Take care of your humanity so you can offer your humanity in the Nara Lila. It's not a separate thing. You have to divinize your humanity. You have to be balanced according to your nature, according to the needs that your nature are demanding. But you can offer all that in the Nara Lila project. It's not separate. You follow my point? So I wouldn't say Varnashram is bad. We have to reject that. We have to... Or the other extreme. Sometimes in devotees getting extremely... We have to reestablish the old ancient Vedic civilization and Varnashram in the world. Only then there is hope for... And your bhakti becomes tainted by karma. Our bhakti is gyan karma adi and abritam. No? So our conception of bhakti has to be freed from this emphasis on karma. On all these type of things. So I would say that in brief words. Yeah. The conclusion which we have to understand Shastra in context. We need sadhu for that many times. Because we may take the book and we may do a disaster basically. There's people who do not know how to read the book. Once I was to hear my Guru Maharaj and someone asked him, which book should a devotee read? And he said, there are some people who shouldn't read any books. He said. They don't know how to read. They may take the book and totally misunderstand it. So they may need first to hear from someone that makes sure that they are understanding what the actual meaning of the whole thing. If they take the book immediately, who knows what may happen? So he made that point also. No? It's not just, give me the book and what's the next book now? And maybe I didn't understand anything. Probably if I'm asking what's the next book means I didn't understand that this book I read can be read over and over again. you can ever finish a book, especially Shastra. It's not, you cannot finish it. Brahma Janmaviranda Kathara Sasya. So anyhow, something in that connection. Okay. We're already like 2 hours and a half, so with your permission we can. Anurag has a question?
Yes. Did you say that tonight we cannot ask questions? Did I get it wrong? Or is
sorry, what?
Also space tonight?
Tonight. Today we won't have meeting of Q&A because I need to some time for doing some things, but we will have meeting for chanting, we will announce that, and some reading as we did these days. But Q&A we will start to have again tomorrow. I mean, all the other days as well.
Because tomorrow I'm leaving, and in the morning, while chanting, this question suddenly arose.
So what to do? Are we compassionate towards Anurad or not?
Yes! Yes.
Okay.
Shall we share Tausha?
Yeah.
Just that the translation.
Yeah.
Yesterday, you were telling, and that was why only today it came up, because then my mind was peaceful first, and then it was not peaceful again in the morning. Because yesterday then we heard something like there was this question concerning Goda Lila, why there are so many women, so many men. Mm. And then you were answering in a way that made me peaceful, that it is not about women and men at all, because it is transcendence, mm-hmm. like also Krishna mm-hmm. Lila. And then in the morning I was wondering, so why then, for example, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, there are so many verses where Mahaprabhu explicitly also tells something about behavior with women, or also he behaves in a certain way or expects his associates in a certain way towards women, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a way that he teaches which in me creates, yeah,
pain. I get the point. I get the point.
And one could also say you are also an example, being an example of this tradition.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when we heard that you came, then, yeah, normally I would have embraced you and everything. And
but he's a sannyasi.
Exactly. And I could. And, yeah, so then if this is what, as you said, transcendence is not about gender and sex at all, then why is it mentioned so often, and not only mentioned, but in a way that discriminates or seems to discriminate?
Yeah, I see, I get the point. Yeah, transcendence, there is no gender and all this, but how much transcendental we are, to begin with. We can say, okay, we are not these bodies. Everyone can run naked, no problem. But how much you are only perceiving the Atma and not being distracted by... No? So when Mahaprabhu is sharing some recommendation about how to relate and behave, for example, with ladies, he's speaking not so much from the transcendental perspective of the unity of the Atma, but more from a social expectation according to a particular system prevailing at that time, like his Varnashram. And it's not something with woman, but it's like mutual. Not like to preserve respect and proper relationship. It's not about discriminating or rejecting, but it's about actually, because I value all of you, because I try to respect all of you, in some case I may need to take some distance. In a formal way. No? I won't be entering the shower if a lady is taking a... We are not this body. Excuse me, with your permission. We are transcendent. We are not this body.
Yeah.
No, so that's it's not about rejecting anyone. It's about also being careful and aware with where we are and try to respect each other. And but for example, also you have this example when Mahaprabhu is having darshan of Jagannath one day, and one Vaishnavi comes and she wants to see Jagannath. But Mahaprabhu is in front, he's tall. So she cannot see Jagannath. So she's so willing to Lolyam to see Jagannath that he climbs up Mahaprabhu's shoulders.
Oh wow.
Sannyasi. But she was not aware, it's a sannyasi, it's a man, it's Mahaprabhu. She was just Jagannath. So she climbed on Mahaprabhu's shoulder and she starts to look at Jagannath on top of Mahaprabhu. So all the associates of Mahaprabhu become like, what's going on? You come down, please. What are you doing? Oh, it's a sannyasi. And when Mahaprabhu realizes that, because Mahaprabhu was also absorbed in seeing Jagannath. So he was absorbed, the lady on his shoulders were absorbed. No, nobody noticed what was going on. But some of the devotees noticed that. And they were also wanted to take care other people may not misunderstand Mahaprabhu and criticize him and not being able to appreciate what he wants to give. So they bring her down. And Mahaprabhu looks at her and realizes it was a lady. And what does he say?
Oh, you should have...
Aho! He said, oh, if I would just have that type of longing she has. I'm so unfortunate. Like glorifying. She has so much longing that she transgressed.
You are a barbarian that you took her down.
Yeah. Yeah, so you interrupted her darshan, and I am not as fortunate as her who transgressed all these codes, but only the transgression came out of. That's the point, no? Because if not, we take the excuse. Oh, let me transgress anything. If you have Bab, you are not aware you are transgressing anything, because you are aware of something else. Now, my Guru Maharaj likes to say, a Bhava Bhakta cannot follow all the rules. Not because he or she does not want, but because he or she cannot follow. Because the Baba is so much that is taking the person who knows here and there, climbing on someone's shoulder. The Baba is taking you. You are not calculating. You follow. You're not, oh, this is sannyasi, but I will transgress to have that. It's not happening. Just like, So again, sometimes Mahaprabhu is instructing on a more general, relative level. Because he's speaking, he's a sannyasi. Sannyasi is mostly like a teacher in the world, if you will. That's why Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas on one level. Again, there are levels of explanation why he accepted sannyas. So in connection to his giving, establishing Yuga Dharma and so on, he realized, oh, if I become a sannyas, people will offer me some respect. And that will protect them from offending me. Because if not, they will think I'm just a crazy person because I'm all day crying and dancing and rolling on the ground. So he took sannyas as a, what we call preaching strategy. So it's something relative. But he's making sometimes this point about how to properly relate in society for those who are on that level.
But there is also separation in this taking sannyas from mother and family and Navadvipa.
Yeah, that's another layer of consideration for sure. Again, that's part of the earthly lila, as we say. On earth, Krishna lives, quote-unquote, Vrindavan. The parallel in Gaur lila is Mahaprabhu lives Nadi accepting sannyas. But that has a lot of purpose, not only for us, because without his sannyas we wouldn't be here, but also for his inner purpose of his descent. Krishna is feeling, as Radha and the gopis left everything for me, now I will do the same, trying to reciprocate with them. And many other things.
I just feel this other episode that I remember that once was told, that there's a little girl reciting a rustic verse, and then Mahaprabhu is also in Bhav, and he's running after her and wants to embrace her.
Mm.
And then his servant is holding him back. And then he says thank you.
You saved my life.
Episodes like this.
So he spoke on her. You have to understand the
relative. Cannot be God, you know. It just creates a certain void.
You have to understand. I know it's maybe difficult, but you have to. I know it may not be easy, but you have to travel in time, to the place, to the culture, to the language of the time, which is not easy. I mean, it's difficult to travel in time 500 years ago. And we may hear some ways certain cultures are, and it's like, how could it be? But maybe we were part of that culture at that time. It was okay.
It's okay for a human being, but he's God.
He's God, but he's playing the Acharya Lila. Acharya Lila means he's acting as a teacher. So he's making the point, a sannyasi shouldn't be relating with ladies, basically. And I think that's a fair, important point, and you can see in which sense how many people accepting sannyas have associated with ladies in an improper way. So that shows, okay, it's important to make clear. Again, this is not against girls, ladies, men, because at the end of the day, we are not any of those things. Mahaprabhu is speaking on a very relative level at that point. He has no problem with that little girl. He's just speaking from a totally Varnashram perspective, in which a sannyasi will be seen with wrong eyes if he's relating to an opposite sex, if you will. So that you saved my life. In the sense, my reputation will be affected. And Krishna says in the Gita, to be infamous is worse than death. In that sense, you saved my life. He will say, the sannyasi is like a wild cloth. If a sannyasi makes anything wrong, all the spotlights are on that person, public figure. One thing the sannyasi does wrong is like one black spot on a white cloth. If I show you a white cloth and there's one black spot, your attention will go to the black spot and remain there. You won't see all the other things. What to speak if it's not only white, one black spot. So again, there's some relativity to that, but that relativity is used for catching the attention of the public to deliver the teaching and take us beyond all that relativity. So it just has one place in a particular level. So we shouldn't get like stuck there and absolutize that and think, that's the all in all, that's the all in all. No? Mahaprabhu sannyas has some aishwarya. And that's why we appreciate his sannyas. We are not against that. so many teachings are there, so much compassion. But at the end, we don't worship Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi in the altar. You will never see any altar where Mahaprabhu is a sannyasi, because that's not our eternal prospect. We don't want to relate with him as a sannyasi. That creates so much obstacles. Not even for ladies only, but for all his devotees. Because now he is a sannyasi. He's a big person, public figure. You cannot just relate with the intimacy you are related to Vishvambar in Nadia. He's one of us. He's our own people. Our own people. But as a sannyasi, it's like, I can tell you. Sometimes I need a break for so much kijais. There comes Maharaj, Jai Maharaj, Jai Maharaj. I mean, I'm not saying you are throwing me too much Aishwarya. I feel at home here, comfortable. But sometimes that can happen, no? Like Maharaj, 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 Maharaj. And it's like, give me a break of that, please. I understand that's necessary on some level for some people, to catch their attention, to pay attention, to receive some message, and to change by applicating that message. But ultimately, I don't care for that. But of course, in a public fee situation, you try to take care of certain situations, because some things have happened in the past. In my personal case, I can speak about, I had a former guru who had some problems like that. So you can imagine for me, I don't want to repeat that story. But that doesn't mean that I won't be loving to you. I mean, I hope I you feel that I'm not discriminating you, and I'm like treating you like, oh, the council lady. Tell me when she already passed. Okay. Hopefully you don't feel that, because sincerely, I don't feel like that. I think in the class, I'm looking at your eyes, we are looking at each other, we are speaking, we are sharing. If someone wants to speak with me, we can't speak with me. It's not that I don't speak, I'm a sannyasi. Maybe I won't be embracing ladies, but that doesn't mean I'm not embracing you in another way. So everyone has their own style of embracing. Yeah. So that's a thing, no? It's a form, just, no? And we should also be flexible and adapting to how each person prefers to do something with their own, with proper reasons, again. So I've seen lots of problems by sannyasis embracing ladies. Again, going to the immediate experience of my former guru. So naturally, maybe I have some scars for that. And I try to be careful. Not careful because the other person is a danger, but be careful with my own mind. I am the danger. I am my own danger, not you. But that doesn't mean I won't be affectionate or loving. Because how many times you can embrace someone and it's just a physical, sentimental thing, and you can be embracing your enemy. So you, oh, I love you so much. So my point is, at some situations we have to know to go beyond some formalities. And maybe embrace is not there, but the important thing is affection is there.
Yeah,
and real sincerity. No, I'm not saying you were just like, Maharaj, you are not embracing. I'm not saying that. That's one example of other things. But I understand that some people may be accustomed to something. Of course, sometimes I will break those rules, and mostly in one single occasion, and that occasion is when I see my mom.
It may be behind the door.
Sorry?
It's behind the door, inside the house.
Not necessarily. She sees me and she will embrace me. And I will tell her, Jai Mom. Of course, if you're in India, there's another culture, and the sannyasis are not here. There's a lot of relativity to these cultural things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls that cultural baggage. So sometimes we have to adjust to those details according to the times we live in, and be flexible without compromising our ideals. But no, I recently was in Finland in one retreat we had there, and there were mostly all devotees, and there were some new friends coming, a couple, one lady and her husband and their children, very nice person, yoga practitioners, and but very appreciative of our practice. So we were like, at the end they were leaving, so we were, okay, see you soon. And she comes and embraces me. And she caught me like, I was not expecting that, no. So I was like already in her arms, if you will. So of course I didn't say like, what are you doing? Didn't you know that I'm missing? I mean, because I knew from which place was coming and she didn't know, and it was in a situation that was understandable. So okay. You follow my point, no? There is time, place, and circumstance. We have to be flexible in our criteria. So that's basically the thing, no? I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't have to do with the formalities, but what's going on inside and how that plays out in practice, in time, how much that's sustainable, no? If I show a certain type of affection, hopefully that remains as affection. That it doesn't get messed up with something else, which is, ends up being exploitation or whatever, no? Confusion, trauma. Even. So that may take different forms in different situations and cases. So I hope we brought some tranquility back to Anuradha's mind before she's leaving us.
It wasn't intelligent of me, I think, to mention this embracing. Point,
it's okay, it's okay.
It was no not at all the main focus. The main focus is a God who teaches this, who gives this example. And even if you say that in this is a relative platform and that he wants to teach, then I still don't understand, but why does he teach a kind of separation and even discrimination? The whole tradition has got also discriminatory. Ist es nicht wert, das zu übersetzen? Okay. It's full of discrimination also, and this is what I, every time I read about this, then it doesn't go together for me with God, his love, and who would wish, I'm sure, who would wish a natural being to coming together, and this wonderful tradition which teaches us, yeah, we are atmas, and not these bodies, and then he gives such an example. This is
again,
I cannot become.
We are atmas, not these bodies, but for those who do not have full realization of that, God's teaching on that level. That's basically the idea. It's not that God is discriminating anyone.
No, exactly. But this
how that may be represented by some, that's a whole different thing. And I agree with you that in many. I say that the other day, I think, even. And I my opinion is that a big part of our Gaudiya community has lots of chauvinism.
Yeah.
And I'm not supporting that. I'm not agreeing with that. No? And I may say that even in Indian culture for centuries, that has been the case in many parts. And so it's not that everything about Indian culture is kijai. Even in Manu Samhita, there are many strange sections. But again, these are books that are relative. No, they are not like the ultimate divine revelation, but there are certain quotes that somehow are being used in some time and place for whatever reason, but they don't have universal application. So we have to understand who is saying to whom, in which context. And I totally agree with what you are saying. No? I mean, I'm not for discrimination of any type, but at the same time, the word discrimination is not always bad. No? Discrimination means vivek, discernment. So if I as a sannyasi am living in a society where I know that by embracing a lady, people will...
Talk.
Yeah, will talk and criticize and do so many things because they may have some other opinion and so on. I may be especially careful with that. Not because I'm rejecting the lady, because rejecting or accepting someone goes on a heart level, not in a physical way. But I'm taking certain caution on a social dynamics, so the audience is, their faith is not affected and they can hear with proper attention, basically. So if you pay attention, that's even more considerate and compassionate than you are thinking about so many personalities. No? So I'm sure if you have Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi in front of you, he will say something like these things. You will feel from where he's saying that. And you will feel he still loves me. You will never feel rejected. No? None of these personalities felt rejected by Mahaprabhu. They all understood this on certain level, uncertain, rich for certain people. But in the intimacy of his heart, he's loving each one of his devotees. And again, that's why we are do not worship for eternity this sannyas, because this creates these obstacles that we don't like. It has so many nice things, but it has some limitations. Like Mahaprabhu himself told Nityananda, I mean, I accepted sannyas, so this will facilitate my spreading of the message, but also the same thing that is facilitating is limiting me, because as a sannyasi I cannot go to the brothels and the bars and any place to preach, because a sannyasi is not expected to go to low places. So he asked Nityananda, you please go there. So Mahaprabhu himself is acknowledging this sannyas has limitations. It's an ashram, it's a form that will help in society on some level, but will limit it another. So those ways in which Mahaprabhu cannot approach, if you will, someone as a sannyas, he will do that approach through Nityananda Prabhu, who is the other self of Mahaprabhu. They are non-different. So if you feel that in some way Mahaprabhu is not being as loving with you or with us, look at Nityananda Prabhu. And that's how Mahaprabhu is showing non-discrimination, avadhu, totally doing anything for everyone. We shouldn't see the two of them as separate. So they are working as a team. No? So we cannot just expect everything coming from one single place in one single form. No? But he's making the arrangements for us to receive all that we need coming from one side or the other. Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. Shri Nityananda Prabhu ki jai. Shri Sri Gaur Nityananda ki jai. Shri Gaur Gadadhar ki jai. Shri Radha Govinda Dev ki jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Brahma Stuti ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premananda Hari.